Hello, everybody. I once again want to apologize for not uploading episodes for the past couple weeks. I had a lot going on. There was a lot going on at my job. There's just a lot that happened in the past couple weeks. So these episodes were recorded and intended to be dropped on the second week of July, episode 7 and 8. This is episode 8, but I just did not have the capacity in terms of energy and kind of mental strength to upload them and edit them and all that. So I apologize, but I do thank you for your patience. Thank you for letting me take some time off to get my mind right to edit and upload these episodes. So I hope you enjoy them. Thank you very much. And as always, I appreciate you stopping by. Thanks, guys.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Music Podcast. I just want to say up front, thank you so much for joining me. If you've listened to all the episodes, or if you've listened to one episode, if you've listened to half an episode, I really do appreciate your presence, and I appreciate you spending some time with me and listening to me kind of ramble on about things that are kind of important to me and that I kind of obsess over. So I just wanted to say that up front, as always. And of course, again, as always, I will thank you as you depart, no matter when that might be. So just thank you for your presence, your energy, and your positivity. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Thank you. So today I am going to talk about a song and video, actually, that really struck a chord with me when it first came out. My brother is someone who I kind of rely on when it comes to a lot of newer hip-hop that comes out, and so I kind of trust his word on things. We agree on most things already, but I didn't know this had come out when it did, and he told me that I need to listen to the new Kendrick Lamar track. It was the new entry into the Heart series, this is part five. And obviously a lot of people have talked about this. They talked about it when it first came out. When it first came out, after I watched it, I think 3 times back to back, I had to write something because I couldn't get it off of me. It just wouldn't get off my back. So I had to write something pretty much as soon as I finished watching the video for it. And you can see it on the Music blog, which you can link, you can click the link to on the main page. It's there. But I just wanted to talk about it a little bit as it kind of relates to my journey with mental health and also my journey as a Black woman in sort of a mental wellness state or state of being, trying to grapple with some things as a Black woman in the United States. So for this one, I really wanted to kind of be methodical about it just because there's so much to talk about, and a lot of it I have covered. When it comes to the just breakdown of the song and the music video, I talk about that at length on the blog, so you can read it there. I don't want to take up too much of your time rehashing the same thing that I already talked about. But when I talk about it here, I kind of want to look at it from a different angle and perspective. I talked a lot about, in the blog, about the use of distraction to kind of conquer and divide. It's not so much that I put it in those words, but it is something that I think that needs to be kind of talked about a little bit and expounded upon and kind of related to being someone in a place where you were part of the first creation of the country, but you are never fully accepted as part of the country that you built. And that's kind of where I'm sitting when it comes to talking about this song in particular. It's not, I think, supposed to represent only this kind of struggle with being part of a country and engaging in it and engaging with your own culture. There's so many facets to this song. I just don't think that it's just about that, but it is an important aspect of what the song does. So I made a kind of a list of hit points. I'm not going to speak about all of them, but there's some things I really kind of wanted to focus on. And obviously we can start with the sample. If we're going to start, I do kind of want to start from the music strictly and dive a little bit into that. Obviously, it's a Marvin Gaye sample. If you are any sort of fan of music or any sort of fan of Kendrick, you know that he's very intentional about the kind of music that he uses when he samples and his producers who he works with when they use samples. I don't think that it's kind of slapdash. I don't think it's kind of just at random or what sounds cool. I think that obviously it takes into consideration the tenor of the song, the mood of it, the feeling, and obviously the musicianship and the construction and the composition plays a large part in that. And I think the fact that he used "I Want You" is really perfect, not just because the melody and the groove of "I Want You," it's in and of itself, it does have a melancholy feeling. It is a love song, but it's a love song that has a great deal of heartbreak and desperation in it. And there's so much heartbreak and desperation in the Heart Part 5 that the use of the Marvin Gaye sample was absolutely perfection, especially when you think about how the song builds. "I Want You" is based around bongos and a bass, and after that, when he sort of reaches an elevation, when ancestor Marvin Gaye reaches a zenith, that's when you get a lot of the string work, when you get more of the drumming, when you get more interaction between the bass, the guitar, the drums. The bongos still play a foundational role in the song, but they kind of fade in the background a little bit. And their presence is still there and it's still anchoring the song, but it's not the focal at that point once he reaches this sort of jubilee of realization that loving somebody one way is just you living in a fantasy world, but reaching out to somebody and just trying with all your might to get them to actually feel how you feel. He asked the question, "Don't you want to care? It's so lonely out there. I want you so much, and I want you to want me the same way that I want you." There's so much desperation in it for something that's seemingly a sensual love song. And we can talk about how sensuality does play a part in the heart, but it's less about the physicality of it. At that point, Marvin Gaye had sort of switched from or sort of leaning more into the marriage between sensuality and spirituality. He had gone through a lot in his life, and he'd gone through so much at the same time. There was his sort of rediscovery of his own sexuality, but there was also this realization that the world is going through a lot of craziness. This was the early 70s, so we're talking about that time period during the Vietnam War and a little bit after that, when his brother came back and it was explained to him the atrocities, which is when we got one of the greatest albums ever created by man, What's Going On, which we can talk about a little bit later. But all of that kind of folds into this era of Marvin Gaye rediscovering his mind, his consciousness, and understanding that the sensations that we feel as humans, love, eroticism, you know, feeling urges, whether those urges be carnal or whether they be emotional, whether they be a desire to really take grasp of one's mental well-being and their healing, there are these impulses that come from something that is not human, that is ethereal and corporeal, that is beyond what we can conceive, we can only receive. And I think that does play into the idea of the heart, where I think Kendrick, in choosing this sample, in conjunction with his producer and composer, I think in choosing this sample and really focusing on the sparseness of it, because at one point he fades out everything and only focuses on the bass lick and then the bongo structure, I think that he's really leaning into this idea of wanting so desperately to be connected with something. And oftentimes that connection, the only thing that we can know for sure concretely is that there are connections to be had with the people around us and the things that we surround ourselves with, and with Black folk that is very much steeped in our culture, in that there is this odd dynamic of wanting to show our love for our people and our pride for our people, but still having a hard time reconciling that with the torment of a history that kind of pitted us against each other from the very beginning. You know, talking about house Negro, field Negro, that whole dynamic, and the spite that there still remains between those who were considered even lesser than those who were in the master's house, and kind of seeing people and seeing this visage of success and perfection, and being both jealous of that, craving that, but also kind of forcefully pushing against it, and using the sample itself has this push and pull. There's this, like I said, there's this need for ancestor Marvin Gaye to cling on to something real, regardless of what time he was in during the I Want You phase. Because the I Want You phase was not too far removed from the What's Going On phase, and the Hear My Dear phase, actually, which was an even darker time for him, compounded with the realizations that his brother was dealing with PTSD and then having to go through a very nasty divorce at that time. So he was very desperately, I think, trying to cling on to something real. And he wanted that real thing to be this person that he says he wants so desperately. And I'll go a little bit into the heart, you know, as a whole, but he ends the song in silence saying, "I want you." And the eeriness of that for me was understanding that at the end, we are still left wanting. At the end of "I Want You," it fades on him saying, "I want you." And not even, it doesn't even fade on him saying, and "I want you to want me too." It doesn't fade out on the entire lyric. It just fades on "I want you." And that's the last thing you hear very clearly, because also it's in another key. So it's very obvious that that's the note that he wanted to leave the song on the person listening, or the person he's dedicated that song to, ancestor Marvin Gaye. he ends the song on this higher note of I want you, just so you can clearly hear that he's saying I want you. And that's the last thing he wants to leave you with, and it's the last thing that Kendrick leaves you with in The Heart Part 5. And so I am so blown away. I know that's sort of a cliche thing to say, but it really did snatch the breath out of me hearing this song and kind of having this prehistory with I Want You, which is one of my favorite songs by Marvin Gaye, and having that prehistory and recognizing the sample as soon as it starts, because it starts with that two-note bass, doo-doo. That's what it starts with. And I think it's so perfect because not only that, The Heart Part 5 starts with doo-doo, and the actual song I Want You starts with that two-note bass lick, and it's supposed to represent a heartbeat, and it's a steady heartbeat, doo-doo, 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 and it just keeps going out throughout the song, and then you add in the intricacy of the bongo, and the bongo sort of, I feel like it's also supposed to represent the anticipation of getting the thing that you want. The anticipation of actually confessing to this person, because there's nervousness, there's anxiousness, like I mentioned, there's desperation. So the bongo playing the triplicate beat that it plays, I think it's supposed to represent the heartbeat speeding up. On the one hand, you have this steadiness that is assuredness of wanting this person, but then having to actually confess that, it brings about a lot of nervousness, a lot of anxiety. Having to confess, Kendrick, having to confess and approach his people, because that's who he's speaking to, approach his people with both gratitude, but also knowing that he's going to have to force them to look at themselves, knowing he's going to have to actually make us confront the pain that we continue to put ourselves in. That is bold, and that is something that I think Kendrick has taken on as a challenge for himself, to not only unfold his own emotions and examine them, but also say, I'm doing this, so you need to look at yourself and do the same thing. And it's bold of somebody, especially a rapper, to go that route, where he's like, I'm no longer here to entertain you. I'm here to inform. And not so much to say, you know, how dare you be this, not to judge, but to let you know that there's so much deeper pain that we are still dealing with in 2023, and it released last year, so 2022, that we refuse to acknowledge, and we refuse to actually really examine. And I'm here to kind of blow past the BS and get to the heart of what it is that we're dealing with. So going from the sample, because I know I spent so much time on that and I didn't want this to be a long episode, but I got really invested in the sample and how beat for beat, it is saying the same thing in a different way than Marvin. I do think that obviously he was writing a love song or a forlorn love song. I do think he was, but I think that in his mind there was more to it than just that. I really honestly do. I think that Ancestor Marvin Gaye had a lot of demons that he continued to fight and struggle with from his days with Motown, his earliest days wanting to be a jazz musician, to eventually becoming this voice for especially men confronting their insecurities. And I have no illusions in my mind that I Want You is a surface level song. So from that, I want to go a little bit into this idea of the culture, moving away from talking about I Want You all together and just looking at this idea of the culture, because it's the pervasive message in the entire song. and unlocking this notion of what it means to be, quote unquote, the culture. Because when you talk about the culture, automatically you understand you're talking about Black culture. Because the culture, capital T-H-E, the culture very much is defined by the presence of Black people. And there's no getting around it. There's no denying it, that culture as it is today would not be what it is if it weren't for the influence of Black people. And in fact, it, as so much of the land that we live on was built, the land as we know it now, because the land was already here, let's not forget. The land was already here. There were people who were already caring for the earth. But in terms of what it is now, what we were brought here for as farm equipment, as construction equipment, that's what we were brought here for. As much as the land itself was built on our backs, the actual culture was built on our backs as well. So much was taken from us with very little acknowledgement. And so when you see things moving in a different way, in a certain way, and you see trends happen, when you see even nuances of language, which again gets buried under a term that will make it digestible for mainstream, or that will allow more of the mainstream to take without actual acknowledgement, you have to understand that a lot of everything that has become what it is rooted in a lot of pain. And so when he talks about the culture, I believe Kendrick is talking about the amount of pain. The culture is just a label, if you will, quote unquote, is a pseudonym for the pain. Because so much of what we've created comes from that, and it comes from a deep generational, you know, we talk about generational PTSD, but I think there's a deep generational resentment that we've never gotten over, and it spills over into the things that we create, but it also spills over in how we treat each other. We're so willing to give a pass to everyone else that's outside of our purview, outside of our experience and understanding. We're so willing to give a pass to people who can convincingly cosplay as who we are, but we have a hard time accepting ourselves. And that is something that has been ingrained in us so much that it becomes a part. It becomes, I think, one of the defining features of Black culture, which is unfortunate to say. One of the defining features of Black culture is actually pain. And people don't understand that. People don't digest that. And people commodify that and erase what it is that makes what we do what it is. Because it comes from a place that, even if it's subconscious, it comes from a place of very deep hurt. And, you know, there's a quote, and I don't even remember who said it first, and I feel bad for this, but to the original person who said this, I give you all the praise, because this is exactly what it is in a nutshell. They want our rhythm, but not our blues. And that's exactly what's been taken from us. We're stripped of our creativity, our originality, our rhythm, but stripped and watered down so much that nobody, like, it becomes a commodity. It becomes devalued because there's none of the actual depth of pain and hurt and sorrow that comes along with it. Anything that we create comes with a lot of baggage. Again, even if we don't realize it, anything that's created by Black folk comes with a lot of baggage. And what mainstream society has managed to do is leave all the baggage at the airport and just go into the city and have a good time. So it's it when he talks about the culture, and it's very obvious, of course, in the music video, which is extremely simple but incredibly brilliant and complex at the same time. But the lyric that kind of wraps it all together and brings it all home is when he said, in a land where hurt people hurt more people, fuck calling it culture. Like, the reason why that gives me pause is because he said a lot in this song that is poignant and necessary and also reverential. Especially, he's giving a lot of reverence to Nipsey Hussle, who's such a big influence and inspiration for him. And that entire ending portion of the song, the last quarter of the song is dedicated to Nipsey and his family, which is understandable. But that lyric where he says, we're in a land, and he talks about not even in a place, in a country, no, land, because that's the whole point. In a land, because that's what it is that we were brought to. We weren't brought to a country, we were brought to a land that was already occupied, but we were brought here to build it and to, I mean, this is what this land was built on, not just the sins of slavery and chattel slavery, but the sin of taking people from their own home to further exploit people who are already here. This is a land where, that's what he's doing. He's defining the land. This is a land where hurt people hurt more people. We came here broken, bloodied, starving, assaulted, and put to work. Physically, emotionally, and mentally traumatized people brought here not as humans, but as equipment to exploit and further demean the people who were already here and who have been up until our arrival on the transatlantic slave trade, who had been being hurt. Hurt people are hurting more people, and it's a cycle that has continued. And as much as there needs to be healing, especially between Black folk and our Native brothers and sisters, our First Nations peoples, our Indigenous peoples, the peoples of this land, the people who are of this land, there needs to be a reconciliation. We still have a hard time reconciling with ourselves. The notion of we are brought to further traumatize people just adds credence to the idea of this is a land. This in particular is a land where hurt people hurt more people. That's what this place is. The people who decided to bring themselves here fashioned themselves hurt people. And so they brought their trauma, their pain, their ego to other facets of the world. And then further exploited the land that they wanted to call their own home. They didn't want to share it. They wanted to take it. That's not what I kind of want to get into, but it's honestly, that is exactly what this land as it is now, what this country is now, is just a land. It's a mass of space where people who are hurt lash out because they have not dealt with their trauma. They have not dealt with the scars of their past. They have not dealt with the sins of their past. They have not dealt with the anger. They haven't dealt with that. So what people do when they haven't dealt with things within themselves is that they find other people to hurt because it gives them an outlet. It feels like it's helping them resolve something, but all it's really doing is adding more darkness to their already fractured selves, We are all fractured people in some way. But having this notion that you have to actually lash out to somebody else so that they can feel what you're feeling. Honey, they already feel what you're feeling. It may not be the exact same reasons or the exact same scenarios, but they already feel the hurt. And so you're adding more hurt to them. So what are they going to do? There's one of two options. And more often than not, people choose to hurt other people. That is what this is. This is a place of perpetual pain. That's what this is, a place of perpetual heartache and pain. For with the deceptive ideal of advancement, the deceptive thought of making thing of improvement, of discovery. You know, we were hiding behind a lot of buzzwords like discovery and creation and innovation. We're hiding behind those things so that we can justify the fact that all we're doing is exploiting other people for our benefit, for to make us momentarily feel better. Because once that high goes away, you always seek more and you seek greater, a greater high, so that it'll keep you in this sense of contentment for a longer period of time. So if that's what it means to be the culture, this pain that spills over into more pain and hurts more people, why the hell do I want to call that my culture? And that's the part that really just struck me. I remember watching the video, and this was in the video, this was the portion where he transforms into Will Smith. And I want to talk a little bit about that. I don't want to go too much into it, but I do want to talk a little bit about that. But in that moment in the video when he said, and this is, he turned into Will Smith exactly when he said this line. He didn't lead in with Will Smith. Will Smith came when he said, Will Smith's visage, if you will, Will Smith's face appeared when Kendrick says, in a land where hurt people hurt more people, fuck calling it culture. I remember very distinctly how my heart just shattered. And that was the point where I almost cried. I'm not a crier, but it tore through me. When I feel things, I kind of do a Celine Dion beat my chest situation, because that's kind of what happened. That moment in the song will forever cement itself as one of the more profound things to me that Kendrick has said. And Kendrick has said some stuff now. Kendrick has said some incredible things and has made some amazing points on his way to find his own peace of mind, as it were. And when he said, in a land where hurt people hurt more people, I'm not calling that culture. He in that moment, he acknowledged what it was with all of the things that I said. It was loaded with all of that, and then in an instant rebuked it. So I'm no longer willing to call this culture. I'm no longer willing to call repressed pain that I force onto other people, I'm no longer willing to call that culture. And in fact, that I force onto my own people, I rebuke having that be what our culture is. And that is sort of when the song does reach its zenith, musically. And then after that, he has to take a moment. And he says, drop the drums out. So you just have the bass, the heartbeat. Do-do. Do-do. And it is a little bit more intricate. The bassist does a little bit more work here, I think, because in this point in the song, especially in the original song, the composition is a little bit more complex. And I think stopping that moment with the heartbeat, that is a little bit more complex because, again, he's upset. His heart is racing, so the bass, the heartbeat, the foundation is a little bit more complex, and then leading in some more with with the cadence of the bongo. He takes a second and he breathes, collects himself, and then goes into talking about, I think, at that point, talking about Nipsey and his... And it's relevant that he rebukes what we've been forced to identify as the culture, to talk about someone who really was trying desperately to turn the culture around. Nipsey Hussle is no different than anybody else, was no different than anybody else, rest in peace. But there came a moment in his life where he said, it's time to change. He is of that lifestyle of hurting other people. And he said, oh no, enough. I don't know what it was, because I didn't follow Nipsey Hussle that deeply. But I do recognize that at some point in his life, he recognized that this is what he was doing. He's perpetuating this white supremacist notion of hurting other people to make yourself feel better, to justify your own quote-unquote ideals. It's not necessarily the word I want to use, but we're going to go with it. To justify the things that you do to other people. And Nipsey understood that it was time to try to do something to make that no longer what defines black culture, black people, black spirit. We no longer have to cling on to pain, and we no longer have to foist that pain onto more and more generations of people. We don't have to repeat this cycle. It doesn't have to happen this way. And the fact that he passed away because somebody was putting their pain onto him, Kendrick personifying Nipsey Hussle, both in the video and in the lyrics, because I believe he's speaking from Nipsey's spirit, where he says, the person who gunned me down, and I'm paraphrasing this part, but the person who gunned me down, I forgive you, but do understand that your soul is in question. That while I can forgive you as my brother, and I do forgive you because what you were doing was exacting your pain on somebody else, I forgive you for that. But you need to reevaluate your soul because it's in question. As in, your soul is a little black. It's a little dark. Your soul is smudged. It's tainted. But also, it's questionable whether you're going to see the paradise that you're desperately trying to find. You're desperately trying to find it out in these streets. You're desperately trying to find it behind the barrel of a gun. You're trying to find it in all these ways. You're never going to reach that paradise because you continue to feed on and use the pain and darkness in your soul to reach something that you're not going to get. Not if you continue to think that in order to purge yourself of your own pain, you have to throw it on somebody else. You're not going to get where it is that you want to be. I'm going a little bit off of my notes, but it's because the more I dig into this song, the more that I find fascinating, and the more, which is kind of what I do when I write, but the more explication that happens, the more that I can dissect the visuals of it, the more I can dissect the imagery, because there's an awful lot, and Kendrick is so clever with not just his pen, because that's an easy thing to say, that's a cop-out, but what's elegant about what Kendrick does is that he's able to pack so much into very simple lines. He's obviously playing with the idea that you already have all the information. And if you don't, you can pick up the pieces. I think that Kendrick is smart and that he assumes his audience is smart, which is dangerous to do sometimes in hip hop. Not to assume that people are smart, because people are smart and black people are smart, but black people like to escape. Just like anybody else, there's this need for escapism, and you a lot of times find it in what's considered club music, which is a lot of hip hop. You don't want to have to dig that deep. You are capable of it fully. Black people are fully capable of it, and in fact already have the ability, knowledge, and foresight to do that. But there are times when they just refuse to do it. A lot of people refuse to do it with Kendrick. But Kendrick continues to think that his audience, and to understand and know and believe that his audience is smart. He refuses to dumb down himself because he's not going to dumb down his people. And so in his lyrics, there is a lot that he packs into one and two verses. Not even verses. In a few words, he packs a lot of history and expects you to pick up on it and to just feel what he's saying. And so when people sit down with Kendrick and they actually want to listen to him, when they're in the mood, because there are a lot of people, you do have to be in the mood to listen to somebody like Kendrick. You really do. Because he is Tupac, but with this desire to fully come into who he is as a man. Tupac was on his way to really, really doing that. But he was on a course in his life where he was doing that with his art, because he was a sensitive. He was an artist. He was a theater kid. He wrote poetry. He was an artist. So he tapped into that very often. But there were times where he hid behind the bravado, and he did it unironically. I think Kendrick, even in his earlier stuff, did kind of hide behind the bravado and the stereotypes, but kind of in a tongue-in-cheek way, where it wasn't just on the surface. It was, again, with this understanding that there's a lot of baggage here that goes into me talking about sleeping around, about doing drugs, about banging. There's a lot that goes into that that I'm not gonna say because you're smart enough to understand what I'm talking about. And Kendrick does that a lot now. But when people do finally sit down and listen to Kendrick, the reason why there's such a visceral reaction is because they know what he's talking about. And when you don't want to deal with it, you become angry, and again, hurt people hurt more people. And they want to pass it off as, oh, why can't he just do this? Why is he so deep? Why is he pretending to be... No. Because that's all deflection. And that's what the whole point of the video and the song itself is. It's about deflection. It's about not tackling and grappling with those things that have kind of made you surrender to your baser self. To make you kind of fall into and fall prey to the heartache and the pain. You're lashing out because you don't want to deal with it. Which, you know, it is what it is, respect to you. And it's fair to say that some people just simply don't like him, and that's fair. Music, even at its most profound, is completely subjective. You are not forced, or you are not required to like Kendrick Lamar in the least bit. But I know that a part of that is because he's tapping into darkness that people do not want to deal with. It's like, we already have so much of this. Why we gotta listen to it again? I'm just trying to party. Like, why I gotta listen to this darkness just so I can twerk at the club? Like, why do I listen to all this when I'm just trying to have a good time? It's understandable. But that's the reason why. Because he knows you get it. And you can either accept that and deal with it and grapple with it in that moment, or you can brush it aside. He very much gives you the option, but he's not going to stop doing what he does because you don't like it. And The Heart, I think, is the epitome of that. I think that all of the songs in the series are kind of the epitome of that, but I think that this one kind of is the culmination of all of that put together and all of his experiences, obviously. I think he comes out with The Heart whenever he's at a point. I feel like it's a crossroads type of project for him, when he's coming to a point where he's yet again transforming as a person. And calling it The Heart, I think, is a very obvious nod to that. It's like, my heart has shifted again.
and I need to tell you what's happened. And with all of the things that are happening in culture, and that's why he calls it the culture, because that's what we're focused on. We're focused on cultural iconography. We're focused on Black celebrity. And the fallacy of celebrity is that it assumes but knows that people are perfect. People are not perfect. It assumes that they have to strip their humanity and become a symbol. Again, coming to this land, coming to people as not human anymore. You're a commodity. And so therefore you have to act, move, and behave as an inanimate object would. You have to be perfect in your design. And every time, and anytime you step across that, anytime you do something that goes against what we expect, you've suddenly become this pariah, this horrible, terrible person. And we react to that really weirdly, I think, in this culture. Because on the one hand, because Will Smith has constantly, since he was a teenager, been trying his best to be his best human self, there are times when those who are trying to be their best become their worst. And because he's tried so hard to set himself up as somebody who is really trying, and I can see the effort, and people may not believe it because he has a different way of speaking. He was brought up speaking that way, first of all. The way he talks, the way he presents himself, his mother taught him to do that. So he's not doing he's not putting anything on. He's doing what he's been brought up to do, which is speak with eloquence and articulation and to try his best to speak with truth and honesty. And that, for some reason, comes off as profound to people in a way that seems like he's trying to say he's above other people. And he's never once said that, and in fact relies more on informing people of his imperfections than how great he is. He exposes himself so much that people mistake that for him bragging. And so when the whole Chris Rock situation happened, which again, to me, was distraction and deflection, and all of this outrage and all these think pieces and all this, that, and the other occurred, people who were paying attention realized that this was just diversion. Because what it is obviously taking, quote unquote, the best of us, according to a white supremacist angle. The best of us, Will Smith, even he is nothing more than a barbarian. He went up on national TV and slapped somebody. First of all, it was a slap. He didn't shoot somebody on stage. Let's get that out of the way. The established order in that institution, which is the Academy, the Film Academy, is filled with so much ugliness and darkness that the fact that a slap is what made everybody clutch their pearls is just hilarious to me. It's not even fascinating. It's just, it's boring at this point and obvious what it is. But people play so much into it. And it's like, why? Why are you playing so much into that? And in fact, our own people played into that. It's this real awkward contradiction of lionizing somebody like Will Smith or Jussie Smollett, who was in the video. I'm mentioning people who are in the video because those are the people that Kendrick chose to focus on for his visuals. So they lionized someone like Will Smith and Jussie Smollett. And Jussie told a lie. He shouldn't have done it. It was stupid and immature. Will Smith got on stage and slapped somebody. He shouldn't have done it. It was stupid and immature. But they didn't kill anybody. Nobody died. They didn't change the course of history. They didn't start a war. They didn't, in fact, they had beef with a particular person, but they didn't start war on their own people. Like a certain other rapper that was also put in the video. And doing it for, again, this hurt people, hurt other people notion. He's never dealt with it and refuses to, and so he lashes out and calls himself profound. There's a line in this show that I was watching. It's called The Dragon Prince, and their second season is called The Myth of Erebos. And there's a line in there where a character says he stomps on ants and calls himself a giant. And oh my god, the way that that hits so hard. It's kind of the same idea in the situation. You're picking fights with people and calling yourself greatness. You're acting like a child. You're throwing temper tantrums. You're trying to get attention. You're not doing anything profound, but you're calling yourself a genius. People are leaning into that. They'll lean more into that. Lean more into a person who actively attempts to be not divisive, but disrespectful. Just plain mean-spirited and dark-sided. But the people who surround him will sort of go on the sycophantic diatribe about how he's playing chess, not checkers. Like, no, boo-boo, because if that's the case, you obviously don't know how chess works. Because if it is, he'd already be in checkmate. Sorry. But the fact that we'll praise this human being over here, who has, and I consider both of them equally in terms of what we would call genius, but for different reasons. They equally have this greatness about them. But on the one hand, one person who chooses to use his greatness to ostracize his own people and other people who have been hurt by a system that wants to keep them with the knowledge that they are less than. You give this person praise, and then somebody who did something that would happen on any public school schoolyard. Somebody who did the equivalent of hitting somebody on the playground. All of a sudden, he's the devil incarnate. And it's just using that for kind of his talking point, if you will, in the heart. I think it speaks a lot to his understanding of what it means to just continue to spread pain and heartache. I've gone on a tangent that I did not mean to go on to, you guys. But what I wrote was, we hyper-focus on Black celebrity, how they're supposed to represent all of us, all of Black people. They're supposed to represent us. And so in that vein, in our eyes, they must be perfect. They must make sure that white people respect us as a people. Otherwise, the second they do something that's a little bit out of bounds, it gives white people more permission to disrespect all of us. And it's this distraction from what's really happening that continues to keep us kind of stuck in our pain when we don't need to be. And there's a lot of things that I wanted to talk about, and I think I landed on pretty much everything and didn't mean to. But there's also the idea of the culture and the stigmas in the culture, and one of the biggest ones, which is one that we really should rally behind to work on and to improve and to kind of get ourselves out of, is the stigma of mental health. The stigma of if your mentality isn't as strong as it's supposed to be, quote unquote. You know, our ancestors and our grandparents, our great-grandparents, they all dealt with depression, anxiety, and PTSD, but they never actually addressed it because you were either supposed to pray it away or you were just supposed to be strong enough. That's a lot to ask for any human being, but the fact that we're both supposed to be these godlike creatures who can let things brush off our shoulders, but also not even supposed to be human, it's this weird power dynamic, weird struggle between living in your truth and having to hide yourself, because if you don't, then you're not black enough, or you're not you're just what they think you are. There's a lot to unpack. The Heart is a very complex song that I think, as much as it deals with the notion of distraction, societal distraction, it deals with this idea that our culture is the foundation of blacks in America. Our culture is both pain and mental instability, and we have yet to actually reconcile that. We've yet to approach a point in which we're able to talk about it realistically and then find ways to move on. I think that we're getting there, and it's helpful that a lot of artists like Kendrick Lamar are so open and are willing to really talk about things in a realistic way with real language and with real urgency. I think that we are trying to get on that track. We do tend to sometimes stumble backwards, but we're getting to a point where it's more and more normalized to actually grapple with your heartache, to grapple with your pain. And the fact that he ends on "I want you," not "I love you," which is the same thing with ancestor Marvin Gaye. He didn't say "I love you," he said "I want you." Want is a desire, a craving, and it's a desperate plea for something. And Kendrick ending in "I want you" is also loaded. It's like, I want my people to be with me. And the line, this also happened on the Will Smith permutation. The line, "Look what I've done for you." Will's done so much for this culture that nobody acknowledges or even wants to give him any praise for because of their perceived idea of who he is. But he stares into the camera and says, "Look what I've done for you." And the second I make a mistake, you want to forget that I exist. You want to tear me down. You want to try to remove me from consciousness because I made a mistake. Was it stupid? Hell yes, it was stupid and childish. But he's human. To pretend that we don't do stupid, childish things on large scales is laughable. But he's done so much, and it's not enough. So I want you to recognize me as a human. I want you to be behind me. And I want to be behind you. And I want you to want me too. I want you to want me to be better. I want you to want me to deal with this pain. I want you to deal with your pain. I want you to want better for the culture, to redefine what the culture is. I want you. Okay, I think I've rattled on and on long enough, and I've gotten way too passionate, so thank you so much for spending time with me, for letting me really drone on about something that I still have not reached the bottom of. There's so much to dissect in The Heart Part 5, and maybe I will do a part 2, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I think I talked about a lot of things here, and I've annoyed you enough with my overzealousness. So I really appreciate you if you've made it this far and are listening to these acknowledgments at the back end. I really do appreciate you hanging in there with me and for kind of going on this journey with me of kind of spontaneously rediscovering what it is that made this song hit so hard for me. So I hope that you find ways to deal with your pain. And I hope that there's someone to embrace you when you do. And I hope that you understand that you are important and loved and necessary, and you are worth, absolutely worth, crawling out of your pain and seeing brightness and seeing light and seeing happiness. I want you. Thank you, everybody. Peace across.